Welcome to the Comic Book Rundown.
Hello, and welcome to the Comic Book Rundown. I'm your host, Joe, and with me today is my co-host, Ron.
Hello.
And also with us, from the DC Comics Squadcast, we've got Chris.
Hello. How's everybody doing?
We're doing good. How are you doing?
I'm good, man. I am just, well, not anymore. I finished it, but I was sipping on some sangria, which is something I never thought I'd say or admit, but a buddy of ours made it. It was delicious. So, hey, there you go.
If you have a drink and it's good, that's all that matters.
All that matters.
Exactly.
There's right here. Fantastic.
Vanilla porter.
Yes.
Nice.
There's a podcast I listen to and I'm good friends with based out of California. And they're apparently brought back the icing challenge, which I never knew was a thing. But you apparently hide a Smirnoff ice somewhere, and the first person that touches it or sees it has to get down on the knee and chug it. I bring it up because they posted a Instagram thing about that, and then I saw, unrelated, like a day later, just some other random post of some other guy taping it to his back and hugging his girlfriend, and she touched it and had to chug it. I'm like, this is actually a thing? Never do.
I forgot about that. That was a thing.
Oh, so it was a thing.
Wow.
Why Smirnoff?
It's called the icing challenge. That's why. Smirnoff ice. Like, I don't know. It's look, people are getting creative in this quarantine.
Bringing back all kinds of stuff.
Exactly.
Oh, boy.
By the way, you guys lost the game.
Come again?
Do you know about the game, Chris? Oh, nope.
Fill me in.
Not that.
I was literally about to knock him in the middle for some reason. Came in my mind. We were talking about bringing things back, and I was like, wait a minute, that was the other thing. It's like seeing the or whatever. Yeah. I don't even remember what the rules of that necessarily were, but
The circle game, you have to get them to look at it without telling them to look at it. And as long as it's below your waist, you get to punch him.
There was a guy at work I do that to all the time. He could never get me, but I got him all the time. And I think I still owe him like 4 punches.
We'll see. People are going to be weird about those punches nowadays.
I made a cardboard cutout of myself doing that and sat it in like back in the one of the hallways at work and got people with it all the damn time.
Again, the things we do for entertainment.
Yep.
So before we get into our story today, Chris, this is your first time on the show. So
yes, thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for coming on. Would you mind telling everybody your comic book origin story?
Sure.
Basically, like how you got into comics and all that.
Yeah, it's my mom's fault. It's a weird, like, I've talked to Jordan about this a lot and other folks, but it's a hard thing to sort of pinpoint. And it got to the point where I actually called my mom one day. I was like, where the hell did this whole thing start? Can you just tell me? But basically, my first comic books were from a thrift store kind of secondhand shop. And there was packaged together in like a, not a board, shame on them now in hindsight, but the bag had a few comics, and the first appearance of Robin, first appearance of Batgirl, and a Flash comic that was like dead in the middle of a story with, God, who is it? I think Mirror Master was involved. Anyway, very confusing, but like I read them all the time anyway. And I don't think they were like originals that would be like super valuable or anything, like some kind of a treasure trove, but like I wore them out. And she then would go to places like that, and if she saw something, along the lines of any kind of superhero comic book or toys or whatever, she would get those for me. And so, of course, everybody's into Batman the Animated Series at the time, and X-Men and Spider-Man, and it's just it's this explosion of like actually really good animated content. But these comics, but she didn't, it was weird. She like got me into comics, but she didn't let me go to the comic shop because there's like posters of, you know, women that aren't fully dressed, and it's a little exaggerated, and it's
a little exaggerated.
It's, you know, she was weird about that, which I get, but it's really, that's the start, is we walked into a thrift shop and you know, the rest is history. We started making paper mache, not paper mache. We would take construction paper and make like Swamp Thing full body covering, like using Scotch tape Swamp Thing suits, or like the Rocketeer with like spray painted 2 liters strapped to a backpack as the rocket, whatever. We turned a milk gallon somehow, and I don't remember even how this worked. We turned that into the helmet. Like she like cut a certain part off, and like, you know, the plastic jugs, like took the handle, she would cut in a certain way. So it was like the fin. There was a lot of cardboard and taping involved in spray paint, but that was just what we did when I wasn't in school. And so it's just super ingrained. And again, I don't know why, because she doesn't have a history of like loving this stuff. I guess it was just like, she knew that I would just click with that. We could get creative with it and kind of make it a learning process too. So that's where it started. And that was, I mean, that's like earliest memories that I have, is like making superhero costumes and like picking up old comic books and stuff. So
that's really awesome.
That is awesome.
That's great.
Very fond memories.
Yeah. I talk about parent, you know, mothers not liking scantily clad women. I remember one of my first comics that I bought myself, well, I had gotten myself, was a Superboy annual number one or number two. It was one of the Elseworlds. And in the back was one of Superboy's like friends. And it was like Superboy on a different world, like Earth is destroyed. And so it's a whole different, it's not Connor Kent, but there's a girl basically in a bathing suit. And my mom saw that and she was like, "Oh, Joe, oh,
he's been corrupted."
Yeah, basically. But that's one of the, you talk about your mom not liking the 90s stuff. That just reminded me of that.
Yeah. So it was really, I mean, but it's weird to like find, we found a way to avoid it. Like, even though, I don't know, it was weird. Like, I guess she was just careful about, but then like, you can't really escape it with like, even the X-Men cartoon, you know, they were,
it was bashful. There, but not as like in your face.
Right.
Like say, like Spawn would have been, but
yeah, for sure.
Of course, we weren't reading Spawn back then.
No, that was the scary cartoon that was on HBO, which we weren't allowed to have. So.
They just wouldn't buy me Spawn comics because of, well, it's depending on who was on the cover, you know.
Exactly.
It was just no go. I mean, hell, I was lucky that there was never like, you know, a Jean Grey or a Rogue on the X-Men that my mom bought me, because if they would have been on the cover, which is all she looked at, I'd have been screwed, because it would have been like, nope, sorry, well, you can't get those.
Again, especially in the 90s when Jean Grey just wore like the string bikini covering barely anything.
Well, even in her full suit, her, you know, her breasts were bigger than her head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that reminds me. Okay, so when X-Men the movie came out in 2000, I'm sure every Toys R Us and every KB Toys and whatever was just loaded to the brim with that, you know, all the action figures and stuff. But I went to Toys R Us and it was just like, at the time you had to kind of walk, you would walk in and you'd walk through like aisles basically to get into the store. So they had, all the like action figures, I guess, that they wanted to feature there. And so X-Men the movie, I'm like, yeah, I need all the action figures. And so the Storm action figure was very low cut. There's like a lot of cleavage, and like I could get it. But my mom took a I guess her the suits in that movie were all like black with like the different detail. So she was like, the one condition was she took a black marker and like drew over the cleavage. And I was like, I mean, it's still there. And I'm a little boy with a good imagination. Like, you're not doing anything, but sure, draw over it. That's, and I still have that figure somewhere, not out, but like, yeah, I'll have to send you a picture or something on Twitter. Cause that's really funny. The links, that I guess, awesome. That parents will go to protect. But, I mean, not shaming it. It's just funny sometimes.
Yeah, it's no different because, I mean, I don't do as much for my kids, but I'll do something similar. So, yeah, we get it.
Yeah.
You get it.
My mom bought me the movie Road Trip, not knowing what it was. And so, like, she gave it to me. Like, this was a birthday present. And so I was like, well, do you guys want to watch it? And she's like, oh, no. She's like, you guys just watch it downstairs. I'm like, okay, cool. So me and my cousin Brian, who is 2 years younger than me, we go downstairs. We watch this. We're just like, you know, rewind, shower scene, play, rewind, play. Why aren't you guys watching the movie down there? Oh, we missed something. We thought we heard something. We were trying to see something. Yep. Oh, okay. And it's just like, well, yep. And then. Then she watched American Pie with us, with me and Andy, my sister.
Oh,
God. And oh, my God. Like, she's hiding her face with pillows and stuff. And I'm like, and we're just sitting there, you know, like, this is normal stuff, you know? You've never seen boobs before, Mom? Come on.
we were raised, like, really pretty religious in, like, the United Pentecostal Christian side of things. Our family wasn't really very much that, but my parents wanted us to go to a school that was at a church that was totally that. And so that became our friends. So then you start going to church there and you just start to slowly integrate. So we weren't really by the book, Pentecostal, I guess. It was just so that's the environment we were in. So regardless, it's like, you know that an R-rated movie didn't touch our house until we snuck in The Matrix on VHS that we borrowed from a friend down the street. And of course, my mom found it and was like, what is this? What are you doing? It's like, it just says R on it, so it's bad. Which is like, if you watch The Matrix now, it's like, this would not be rated R today. It would be a PG-13. Because I don't even know if there's any F-bombs in that movie. But like, it's just funny, like that. Trip story. I'm like, my mom would have had a conniption, like lost her mind if she knew we were like watching that movie.
That's awesome.
Ay, ay, ay.
All right, guys. I think actually what I may end up doing is cutting that and putting a lot of that into the chitty chats.
I guess that was pretty chitty chatty.
We did. And I'm like, do I want to just make this a chitty chat episode or do I want to just now I'll cut it up because we got stuff to cover. We got
that. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's almost like we never go on tangents like this.
Never. okay. So before we get into the book, Chris, would you like to pimp out your podcast, plural? Because not only are you co-host of the DC Comics Squadcast, you have your own podcast called the Horror Comics Podcast.
Yes. Horror Comics Podcast is it's a few things. I don't really have a specific format. It's a couple of things. I'll do like a radio play style.
Those were fun. I'm not gonna lie. I did like those.
It's dumb and it's cheesy, but I have so much fun doing it because you get to do voices if you're reading Tales from the Crypt and you could do it and like edit the voices and add like music in the background. So it's a lot of that, but I wanted to dig into the history. Like I wanted to talk about these publishers that aren't really around anymore and a lot of these writers that are big names now, but they got their roots there in horror. So that's a big side of it. But there's also episodes that I do where we're just talking about like I on the show I've covered and I meant to do the whole thing, but I got distracted with something else. But I did the first three issues of what we're going to be covering. Something is Killing the Children. And but I didn't do it in that radio play style. It doesn't really work for new comics. So I'll just kind of go through and review it. Yeah.
It really doesn't work for this book either, which we'll be getting into here.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not really lighthearted or funny type of horror here. But yeah, so Horror Comics Podcast, DC Comics Squadcast with Jordan. That's my bag. That's what I do. So it's all comic related on my end, but just different so ends of the spectrum.
The DC Comics Squadcast, you guys cover what is the current stuff, correct?
Yeah, it's like we'll take picks from the new books that are coming out, which we've had to sort of switch it up lately, of course, but they're starting to come out again. We talk about certain, not all the books, we kind of started with the guide of like, we're covering the Justice League and each person's solo books. That kind of started to get shaky. So we just kind of started picking and choosing which ones we wanted to cover. So
those early Cyborg. Whew.
Oof. Yeah, we stuck with that one for a lot longer than I thought we.
Yeah,
we really gave it the benefit of the doubt.
I think even after you guys stopped, I was still reading it. I'm like, I don't know why I'm reading this. And then I think it stopped shortly after that. So
yeah, it like stopped and then came back.
Yeah, that was weird.
And it was just, but it came back and continued the numbering, but it was picking up from a different continuity, and it was bizarre. But yeah.
Awesome. Well, and like you said, we are covering Something is Killing the Children today. And so I'll go ahead and give my stuff here. We're doing issues 1 through 5. They were published by Boom Studios. The writer is James Tinian IV. Art by Werther Delladera. I think that's how you say that name. Colors by Mikel Muerto.
Muerto. Sure.
Thank you.
It's Muerto.
Thank you. And the letters by And World Design. And so, yeah, we'll just go ahead and hop into this first issue here, start out with it.
And open up on a game of truth or dare here with a bunch of, preteen kids.
Yeah, I would say they're about 10 to 11, something like that, at a sleepover.
I was thinking 12, yeah. It looks like you've got the shirtless alpha kid here asking the nerdy little kid truth or dare.
I like that he says truth and then he tells them a story, and then the other kid's just like, what's this shit? I had to run around the house naked, huh?
That's because you chose dare.
Yeah.
But he tells them the story about this hideous creature, this monster that is out in the woods behind his house, and you know, he, I mean, he tells a good story.
Yeah. I mean, how do you describe it? It's, let's see. It was in what, hold on.
Hear this noise coming from the ravine, like this, like he says, it's like a big moan.
Yeah.
I mean, he does the thing where it's like, of course he thought it was the wind at first.
Let's see. The thing standing there taller than a standing tree in the middle of the yard. It was
long fingers
and sharp teeth, and it went, and him, blah, blah, blah. He didn't actually give a description.
During that, all I pictured was, you guys remember Tim from Monty Python and the Holy Grail talking about the rabbit and the just giant teeth? I mean, this is just a picture where James, the protagonist here, he's like standing up with his arms out. Like, that's just all I pictured. Just Tim and the rabbit. So then they don't believe him. And so James tells asked the one kid, his friend, truth or dare. And then we jump forward in time to James in an interrogation room with blood all over him. So obviously something happened.
Apparently something's killing the children.
Ah, you did a thing.
Yeah. I like the way that this book is paced. In that way of, you don't see this, you know, it's like, we'll get to the incident, but let's kind of cut ahead and give you a feel for that. And it kind of, it being a horror comic, it's like something that keeps you on your toes. It's like, well, it's this great way of building anticipation.
Mm-hmm.
That I think is really cool. And just real quick to say, James, Tinian, I really don't know how you say the guy's name.
I say Tiny. Tinian.
That's
whatever. It's whatever.
Either way, it's just like, this is a different style, at least from my reading of his work, which I've really mostly read his DC stuff, which is just straightforward superhero. This is kind of a different thing that he does here. And it's a lot less, what's the best way to put it? Like, he can get very expositional and dialogue heavy and very, like, you got panels that you can barely see the characters because there's so many, there's so much description as opposed to like action. And I think here he's perfectly weighed his pacing and dialogue versus what you're seeing and setting a mood. And it's like, I was like, wow, okay, this is great, man. Like, you've really, and he's a great writer, but some, I'm just saying that other side of things sometimes can get a little heavy. This is like really good anticipation that he's building with this one.
Well, yes, because like you said, we're getting to the story after it happened, and we have to picture everything in our minds until later when we actually see the events play out. But just that, it's the whole Jaws situation where they didn't show Jaws until the end of the movie. I mean, one, because the shark didn't work, but you had that anticipation of horror the entire time. What's this thing that's going to come get you? What's this scary monster? You know?
Yeah.
So we jump forward. Well, after James says, like, you know, it wasn't real. My friends are dead. I don't know what happened.
I made up the story. I made up a story, and then they went out there jokingly, you know, and it wasn't real. I swear it wasn't real. I don't know what happened.
We jump forward 2 weeks, and we are introduced to, oh shit, I forget her name.
Erica
Slaughter. Thank you.
Erica Slaughter.
Thank you.
Great name.
I remember the Slaughter part, but I just couldn't remember her first name.
Apparently her dad was a sergeant.
Oh, stop it. But she is walking out of a woods toward this kid in a wheelbarrow. Well, not wheelbarrow, a
wagon.
A radio.
There we go.
A little radio flyer red wagon.
Who has lost her both legs and one of her arms, and looks like she is looks like she lost an eye. And she talks to Erica. It's like, is it over? And Erica has got blood all over her. She's holding a giant machete. She also is way ahead of the COVID-19 craze with her awesome bandana.
Teeth on it.
I'm saying that now, knowing full well that everybody's back to work. Everybody's wearing masks. So
yeah.
Not all of them are that cool.
I actually my mask that I go out with, I got it from Loot Crate, and it is a Walking Dead one where like the bottom half here is like the bottom of a zombie. So pretty cool. I like it. But anyway, so she's talking to this girl, and as they're kind of talking, because Erica isn't really saying much, she gets a phone call, and now she has a new destination, Anchor's Peak, Wisconsin. And she knows that's just where she's got to go. That's where her next fight is. I'll say fight. But she has taken care of this girl, and now this one can go back living life, I guess.
Sort of.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, whatever life you can. This one, so we go back to James back at school, and this threw me for a loop for a second, because there was, he goes to see his friend's memorial picture, but then there's like a bunch more there. So obviously something's been going on for some time, or these kids are dying. Like a suicide pact. Who knows?
Or it's almost like
something is killing children.
Thank you.
But as James is staring on or looking at the pictures, we get this other kid, Dan, comes up and just starts bullying James. Calling him out for being gay, allegedly. Mm-hmm. And one thing I find funny, and I do like to nitpick on little things, his friend, Dan's friend, pushes James away instead of pulling Dan away, because why not?
Well, probably because it was easier to push the little kid away than it was to, you know, pull the bigger kid away.
We can go with that. Again, just a little thing. But
or we can't see his other hand. Maybe he pushed them both away.
Possible.
Yeah.
But as Dan is walking away, he's like, "Oh, so what? You know, you're whatever, Noah or whoever wouldn't kiss you, so you're gonna kill them all. This so bullshit." And James is like, "You know, shut the fuck up. Like, you don't have no idea what you're talking about." And then we go.
Then we meet his principal.
Yep. Pretty cool principal.
Right? I wish we had principals that were like this.
Hey,
but ours weren't. Yeah.
Now he was. Oh, crap.
Mr. Drill wasn't a bad guy.
Mr. Drill was awesome, but he looked like Hitler. He had a mustache that actually was like a Hitler mustache.
Yeah, he had and he even did like the combed over hair. It was
he was an amazing guy. He passed away about 10 years ago, something like that. Yeah, he was an amazing man. So
is it possible that he was secretly a comedian though, and this was all just a bit to be a principal that looks like?
You know what? I could have been.
That's genius. That's brilliant. Like, to me, if that's what he was doing, I'm like, dude. I canceled on Twitter, but it's hilarious.
But basically, this principal is just like, look, I wish you would have, you know, punched the kid in the face. I mean, I know it's not a principal thing to say, but, you know, it's I just started here. Like, I was just a student not too long ago myself. But James is like, you know what? You're cool. I like this. You're a cool principal. The other guy was too old and he wouldn't have cussed in front of the kids. So
he is very lax. I like this principal character a lot. John Collins.
I'm hoping we get more of him later on down the road. I know we don't in this first arc, but also we are, you know, haven't had any new comics since February or March. Not totally sure which. We'll get them eventually.
It trickled out there in February, and now they're starting to
have everything come back.
Now I'm wondering, when was that? Anyway.
Yeah.
We'll start to go back in.
But we bounce back over to Erica, getting off of a bus in Archer's Peak, and this old lady's like, oh, it's terrible about what happened to those children. Wish somebody would do something about it. And Erica's just like, yeah.
Yeah, we're going to do something about that.
Yeah, and she, you know, sees this, the whole like wall of like missing children pictures. It's just kind of like, that's the introduction for her into this town. It's like, yep, this is
so many missing kids that are overlapping, like where you can't even see some of the ones that are, you know, underneath it.
That's a ton. You got the cop or the sheriff, I think, shows up, and I like, I was like, you know, one of them, and she's like, you could say that. She knows all of them, probably. Let's see here. She goes and meets up with James. They're not living in their house anymore. They're currently staying at a hotel, and she wants to get the information of what he saw, not what he told the police. She already knows that. He wants to know what he saw.
They're like living in a hotel because, you know, people in the town think, I mean, some of the kids, I'm sure some of the parents, they think that James potentially killed these other kids, despite the fact that he's free and, you know, able to go. They, you know, obviously think that something else is afoot.
So before you get into that, one thing I also want to point out, she asked what he saw, and then she lifts up her hair and shows this scar, and apparently that's information that he knows she's been through something like that. That threw me for a second. Cause why show the scar? What's the significance of the scar? You know? Like on my second read through, I read that and automatically he's like, Oh, I can trust you. And I'm going to tell you everything now. Like, does a scar mean something that everybody knows?
I took it. I don't know. Actually, I kind of took it as like, I think you're right. I took it as her just kind of like pushing her hair back. But every other shot of her hair is covering her eye. Mm-hmm. So it's not like she's trying to keep her. So, yeah, I mean, obviously I noticed the. Yeah. So.
Okay.
I don't know.
I just wanted to throw that out there. It was a weird thing I saw. I wanted to bring a touch on it. So, all right, let's continue.
Yeah, that's now that's got me wondering, because for some reason that didn't really even register with me. I was like, okay, she's got this scar slash.
Yeah, like the first time I read it, it was I was just like, okay, cool, whatever. Through the reread here,
what it is she's been chipped so that if she gets lost, they can find her again.
Okay,
you joke about that.
okay.
After reading issue 6, you might not be.
I was going to say, I think that might be. yeah, I don't know.
Okay,
maybe she's a cyborg. So this is where you know, everything kind of like loops back around. So he starts. She's like, okay, so you heard screaming, and what then? So this is where we go to the woods, and it's just full on mayhem, because James, with his Batman shirt and pajamas, is screaming for his friends, and they're one of them comes crawling. Noah starts crawling back, well, and then he
kind of half crawls to him,
halfway there,
the upper half.
So he grabs his arm, and that's when he realizes you see his intestines kind of hanging behind.
Oh. Lieutenant Dan, and, you ain't got no legs.
That's the, of course, he's like, you know, this is like, it's crazy too, in the dialogue of like, I don't know, the first time I read it, it made me feel kind of weird. In that, like, when you see something like a horror movie or something that's really intense, that kind of does, it's effective in giving you sort of the heebie-jeebies, yeah, or whatever.
You get that, that
with this full reveal. Yeah. And this begging of like, you know, take me with you kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, I can't, he's horrified. So he starts screaming for help. And as he's running from that scene, he starts coming across his other friends who are also, you know, killed in all these crazy, like, missing limbs and have chunks bitten out of him. He's slipping in the blood, getting it all over him. One of his friends gets slammed down in front of him, and he's been like impaled by one of the hands, the claws or whatever this thing gets picked up and ripped in half right in front of him. And you see the beast finally right in a big splash where he's ripping one kid in half. Carl, I believe, was who it was. Was Carl, that or Tyler? Maybe?
I think that one was Tyler.
Yeah. Carl was the one that was ripped to bits on the ground.
Yeah.
Classic Carl. But you see a splash page of finally you get the monster there.
Yeah.
And it's a great design. I like all of the, not really in order, but all of what I guess would be the eyes are just kind of these like slits where they would be. It's, I don't know. It's really cool. Yeah. So, you know, Erica's kind of got what she needs from him. She gets another phone call on her Nokia burner phone. And she's just reporting, basically this mysterious reporting where she's like, it's Class E, Archer's Peak, Wisconsin, got it handled. And this is kind of where James is like, what have you have? Handled. She's like, you got a monster in the woods. That's why I'm here. I'm going to kill it. And he's like, can I help? Yep. And that's where we end off with part one of Angel of Archer's Peak.
And that's where we'll end this first episode. Thank you for listening to the Comic Book Rundown. If you'd like to listen to more of Chris, check out his other podcast, DC Comics Squadcast and Horror Comics Podcast, on all major podcasting apps. And follow the shows on Twitter at DC Squadcast and at Horror Comics Pod, respectfully. And as always, you can find us on Twitter at Comic Rundown, on Instagram at Comic Book Rundown, or you can send your emails to comicbookrundown@gmail.com. We'll be back very soon with more Something is Killing the Children.